The following is the second section of questions that came after a lecture delivered at West Hartford Town Hall in Connecticut to a packed audience of veterans, peace activists, and concerned citizens. The talks were sponsored by the West Hartford Citizens for Peace and Justice and other local organizations and included talks by former UN Weapons Inspector Scott Ritter and Rahul Mahajan, author of The New Crusade, America's War on Terrorism, and Full Spectrum Dominance, U.S. Power in Iraq and Beyond. He visited Iraq recently. You can obtain information about him at his website, empirenotes.org. On February 5th, 2004, Iraq was in the news as regards to hearings that were being called for and arranged by Washington.
I'm willing to accept everything you guys have said 100%. Everything was wrong. We did everything wrong. The soldiers are kicking the Quran on the ground, killing people, letting them die. Everything. 100%. Let's forget all that. I want to know what each of you guys would do when the civil war starts. I mean, we got the Kurds being bombed the other day, got the cleric being retaliated against today. Tomorrow, the Sunnis, back and forth. Civil war is probably going to start within the next few weeks. Tens of thousands of troops are going to die, hundreds of thousands of Iraqians. Forget everything. No politics. You have control. You're Paul Bremer. Starting tomorrow, what's the three things you would do to put an end to this, put an end to the civil war, fix Iraq, and get the troops home?
First of all, I reject your proposition that we're going to fix Iraq. We're not going to fix Iraq. The solution is simple. It's get the troops home and then let the Iraqis sort it out. It's not my problem. If you think you can fix it, you're just going to stay there and get stuck and bogged down in the mire. We can't fix it. So only the Iraqis can fix it.
Okay, thanks. So your answer is let them fight it out. Let us run. Let them fight their civil war out. Whoever comes out on top, we deal with it. And your answer?
That's not my answer. But let me tell you this. I agree completely with Scott. You must understand, the United States didn't go there to fix Iraq.
I just want to know what you do tomorrow.
Let me answer your question, okay? You have to start with the understanding, if you believe anything I said, they're not fixing what they could easily fix. All this talk about, you know, some people are saying, oh, well, look at the German occupation. We couldn't rebuild electricity in Germany for years. I told you already, Saddam, with no resources, rebuilt far more than the United States has rebuilt in Iraq now. We're not there to fix the country. We're not there to create an independent government there. We're there to serve our own purposes, which I've talked about. And in the pursuit of serving those purposes, we are exacerbating tensions. We are creating more sectarian strife than there was before. We are turning more people, we're sharpening the Arab-Kurd divide and the Sunni-Shia divide dramatically more than it was before. All right, simply by our presence there and by what we're doing. And these kinds of attacks, like the one in Erbil on the KDP and PUK, would not have happened if the United States wasn't there. So the United States is... basically, everything they're doing in Iraq is wrong, and so they should leave, and yet there's this problem that if they leave overnight and there's no replacement, there's no force to keep security, that it's likely, very likely, no one can say with certainty that mass violence will break out. They have deliberately put Iraq in a catch-22. You remove the government, you don't put anything in its place, and then you say, look, you need us, and that's all there is to it. We're going to keep on screwing you and make everything worse, but it's a catch-22. Neither way out works. And I have to say this, that it's a bad situation. There is no perfect solution, but the best solution in a very bad situation is this. Start pulling the U.S. out now. Replace them with an independent UN peacekeeping force that has no component from the United States. I don't believe the United States can be part of a UN force without controlling it. No participation from Britain, no participation from Australia and Poland, the other two belligerents. A UN peacekeeping force that is not the government of Iraq, that does not make policy, does not privatize Iraqi companies, does not change Iraqi laws. Bremer, with the stroke of one pen, decided Iraq would have a flat tax. 15%. Just imagine Bremer in charge of the United States. Well, you don't have to think too hard to imagine that, do you? okay, that won't change any of those things. It doesn't have a mandate to privatize Iraq's oil, but is just there to keep the peace while the Iraqis, by themselves and under their own process, generate a political process just with the possibilities of extreme violence sort of kept out of the picture. That's what we need. We need to start pulling U.S. troops out tomorrow, and we need to have a Security Council resolution which says the U.S. is out, which says a UN peacekeeping force is in, and which, I will add this, the United States has inflicted huge amounts of damage on Iraq illegally, in violation of the law, in violation of the Geneva Convention, and so we need to pay for the reconstruction. We don't need to be there to do it, but we need to pay for it.
So your answer is replace American troops with the UN immediately and declare martial law?
Sir, if you could... UN peacekeeping forces, yes.
Good question, but we got to move on and get the heat down on this building to save the taxpayers some money.
I have no like for George W. Bush. I don't want anyone to think that, as Jonathan can testify to.
Be good, Jason.
My question is about weapons of mass destruction, and particularly nuclear weapons, because a country can have biological weapons or chemical weapons. That's bad, but... and it can kill people, but that can't really destroy whole cities on the kind of level we're talking about. Certain countries now are developing nuclear weapons. The reason I supported the Iraqi war, and I think actually unfortunately now, but the reason I supported it is the idea of Saddam Hussein with a nuclear weapon was terrifying to me. He wasn't anywhere near close. I shouldn't have believed that he was close. But Iran and North Korea are... I think North Korea has it. Iran is this close. An Iranian nuclear bomb is a scary thought to me. And, you know, we say, well, get the U.S. out, get this out, you know, UN everything. What way would you deal with an Iranian nuclear threat or a North Korean nuclear threat? You know, I think that, you know, a lot of countries were afraid of what we did in Iraq. They think we're, like, nuts, and therefore giving up their weapons programs out of sheer fear. Libya did that. Libya never would have given up its weapons programs had we not attacked. Even the crazy guy swinging the drunken beer bottle, as much as that's not a real foreign policy, has been having some positive residual effects, I think. So what would be your way of dealing with nuclear countries getting weapons of mass destruction?
First of all, Libya capitulated to the United States not because of the Iraq War. Libya has been squeezed under sanctions ever since the late 1980s. All right? For at least 5 years now, Gaddafi has been desperately trying to make any kind of contacts, make any kind of rapprochement with the United States. He's been fended off until recently. This was a slam dunk. All they had to do was start talking to Gaddafi, and they could accomplish all of this. It didn't have to have anything to do with the war in Iraq. Second of all, what are we going to do if North Korea gets nuclear weapons? Well, I don't know. You know, here we are just sitting along essentially defenseless except for, 6,000 thermonuclear warheads on intercontinental ballistic missiles. Gee, I wonder what we would do if North Korea got a nuclear weapon. Oh, my God, how scary that could be. George W. Bush, not long ago, in this fall said, and I quote, "Free nations do not produce weapons of mass destruction." An interesting view of history, but has very little connection with reality. I'll tell you, the only country right now that is developing a doctrine of using nuclear weapons, a first-use doctrine for use in wars that are totally and completely voluntary, that the United States just wants to do as part of its imperial plans, is the United States. They're creating a whole generation of nuclear weapons. They're funding a generation of nuclear weapons, which with the entire design is to make the use of nuclear weapons politically okay, politically acceptable. I think that's absolutely absurd and ridiculous. And to think about a greater threat from North Korea or Iran, or say, what if Pakistan got a nuclear bomb? Well, they got one. Oh, gee, they haven't attacked us yet. How odd. Perhaps they don't want to be annihilated. You know, it's not such a big deal. And in fact, in a world in which you have countries like the United States, which are throwing their weight around and invading other countries with this gigantic arsenal, there's some case to be made. I'm not going to make the case. But you could imagine a case to be made for saying that if everyone had them, things would be a little bit easier. Now, Gaddafi actually called for this. Gaddafi said, "I propose that conventional armaments be eliminated and replaced with cheap nuclear bombs to be made accessible to everyone." This was back in the 70s.
Um,
I am somebody who believes that if you have a weapon, eventually you're going to want to use that weapon. So the only way to eliminate the threat of nuclear weapons is to get rid of all nuclear weapons, including the ones here in the United States. Now, how do you go about getting rid of nuclear weapons? I'll tell you how you don't do it. You don't do it by pretending to embrace the concept of disarmament, as we did in Iraq, get rid of weapons, starve a nation of its ability to defend itself, and then invade it in violation of international law. That's not how you get rid of nuclear weapons, because all we've done is send a clear signal to the North Koreans and the Iranians that the only way you stop an American invasion is to acquire a nuclear weapon. So now we've made the world that much more dangerous. You get rid of nuclear weapons by disarmament, disarmament that's founded in the on the fundamentals of international law, negotiated treaties, treaties that are multilateral in nature and binding, treaties that the United States will adhere to as an equal partner, equal under the law. And yet we have the Bush administration, which has policies that are the antithesis of disarmament. We've walked out of treaties. We have sat in Geneva and told our European allies, in the case of the Biological Weapons Convention, that there is a double standard. It applies to you, not to us. That's not how you do it. My recommendation is sound disarmament, founded on the principles of total non-proliferation, meaning getting rid of all nuclear weapons, all biological weapons, all chemical weapons. There cannot be a double standard. And America doesn't have to fear the rest of the world if we head down that path, because we have unmatched conventional military strength and we have unmatched economic strength that we'll be able to leverage into imposing our will on people anyways. So why do we need to have nuclear weapons? Nuclear weapons will only result in radioactive slag heaps, whether here in the United States or elsewhere. That's not the future I want for my kids.
Can ruin your whole day. Can ruin your whole day.
We're going to just take a couple more, and then hopefully speakers will be able to stay after and talk to people.
I'll try to make it brief.
Thanks.
All right. My name is Daniel. I'm a student, and I want to thank you both for great speeches tonight. My question is, we all seem to acknowledge that the Bush presidency is actually more of a criminal regime. Both of you in your answers to questions have said these are men that would do anything to get their power. Mr. Ritter, one thing you just alluded to was the Project for the New American Century, Rebuilding America's Defenses, which they put out. And they said that a new galvanizing event on the scale of Pearl Harbor was needed to galvanize the American people behind another perpetual war. One thing that we're finding out, not through the American press, but through the foreign media, are some interesting facts, like how five of the hijackers trained at secure U.S. Air Force bases. For example, U.S. Air Force Lieutenant Colonel Steve Butler has said after 25 years in the military, he's willing to testify that he trained Muhammad Atta in Monterey. He has been gag-ordered and suspended from the Air Force base. We have people blowing the whistle at the NSA, FBI, and CIA, saying that this attack was allowed to happen and that we had intelligence that should have at least prevented this attack. Now, if this is a regime that's willing to do anything, I've got a three-part question. First of all, when are people on the left and the right going to drop this farce that 9/11 and the official story adds up when we know it doesn't and there's evidence and we can pretend like it doesn't? When are we going to first acknowledge the truth of 9/11? Secondly, when are we going to realize that our republic is actually under threat and that they've got electronic voting machines in all the states right now, that they're redistricting all the states right now, that the Patriot Act 1 and 2 are attacking our fundamental rights, that this is not just Nixonian secrecy, but our very republic is going right into fascism right now. We are Germany 1937. When are we going to stop the jokes and stop this soft activism and get real about this, get militant and begin to fight? The People's Commission won't do it. When are we going to start speaking out and be realistic? That's my question.
I think if one theme permeated my presentation tonight, it was the concept of citizenship. And the necessity of each American citizen to take possession of this country. You do that by recognizing that we are the government, they aren't the government. September 11th, you know, we won't know what happened until the facts are on the table.
Five hijackers trained. Don't you think that's worthy of
it? And no, the facts, excuse me, the facts aren't in. I guarantee you this right now. No one in this room knows what happened. You think you know. But there are documents that the Bush administration have not released to the commission. You don't know what are in those documents, and you won't know until they are released, the facts are put on the table, and we know. So demand that these documents are prepared. Look, there's one document that people have alluded to, and it's a presidential daily intelligence briefing in August that says the president knew Al-Qaeda, named the document named hijackers, said they were going to take airplanes and fly them into the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. People said this document exists. Put it on the table. Why are we mute on this? What? How, are you calling your congressmen? Are you calling your senators? Are you boycotting them? Are you doing what you can? Then get other people to do it as well. Take control of those whom you elect to higher office. You have to. If you don't, and you just sit here and speak, speech is nice. Actions always are louder than words. Take actions. Hold your representatives accountable.
Okay.
Okay. You asked quite a long question there. I will say this. Out of all the things that has happened since 9/11, or actually before 9/11, but we just found out about it afterwards, the thing that surprised me most is the deal with these electronic voting machines. It's stunning. When you're at the point where this is the basic infrastructure of democracy, it's been privatized for absolutely no reason to a bunch of corporations which are heavily Republican, which make sure that their own counting algorithm, they claim their counting algorithm is proprietary information. And so they are counting our votes for our elections, and they say the government and the people don't have a right to know how they're counting our votes. This is astonishing. This is astonishing even for this administration. These are not just a bunch of Republicans. These are a bunch of revolutionaries. In fact, I think they're a bunch of anarchists. They want to destroy the government completely. All right? Everything they've done has been to discredit every institution except those dominated by the radical right wing. All right, so this is phenomenal to me. It's unbelievable. And we have talked about the assault on democracy. I think Scott said a lot about the assault on democracy. It's very real. Anytime when they want to, A, assault the infrastructure of democracy by denying people the right to vote. You remember 58,000 people disenfranchised in Florida in 2000? It's good that problem was solved, right? Except that in 2002, they disenfranchised 92,000 people. And there was almost no whimper about it. So they're disenfranchising people on the one hand, instituting, privatizing the vote counting on the other hand, and having it done by these highly partisan corporations. And they're getting away with it. It's unbelievable. It's ungodly. But I will say this about the 9/11 attacks. There's not, ever since 9/11, there's not been a single place I've gone to speak where someone hasn't said it was planned. And it is true. A lot of these guys got training from the United States. It is true that this whole movement wouldn't have existed if it wasn't for the U.S. The planes flew too slowly. They were scrambled from the wrong airborne bases. All kinds of problems, discrepancies that I haven't heard an explanation of. All I can say is this. The standard explanation that conspiracy theorists give that there was a stand-down order doesn't make sense, and it doesn't make sense for the same reason that Scott gave about some kind of massive planting of weapons of mass destruction there. I'm not going to say it the way he did, but I will say this. I think the majority of people in the U.S. military believe that their job is to defend the country. I don't agree with them. I think that since World War II, the primary job of the United States military has been to go and destroy other countries. All right, that's been the primary job. But most people in the U.S. military believe their job is to defend the country. Why is it that if there was some kind of stand-down order given, why would they obey, and how would it be phrased? And B, why has nobody come forward to say that there was? I don't believe it. I cannot imagine it. So I find that explanation implausible. I just haven't heard a good one. But the fact that you haven't heard a good explanation doesn't mean that there isn't one when the facts come out.